Speak up.
You're listening to Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. We're the campus and community radio station at Simon Fraser University, where we broadcast from unceded Coast Salish territories.
Good morning and welcome to Speak Up for Monday, February the 3rd, 2025. We have an interesting show for you today. And my name is Magnus Thiebald. And joining me in the studio today is...
Stephen Fan.
And we're not sure if Peter's going to make it in due to the weather, but Stephen and I are here for the show today. We got lots of stuff coming up. Of course, we're going to talk about the latest developments in the brewing trade war between Canada and the United States. Stephen's also going to talk a bit more about in depth about tariffs a little later in the program. And you have some arts reports for us today, too.
Yes, there is a one-year-long retrospective at the Bill Reid Gallery of First Nations Art in downtown Vancouver, and the focus of the retrospective is going to be this artist called Christian White, or I'm going to butcher the name, by the way, Kilyada Christian White, who is a very famous Haida Gwaig artist who practices Pacific Northwestern art. Mm-hmm. And what's unique about him is that he doesn't just use the usual materials, but he also uses argillite, which is kind of this really deep kind of dark stone. And it's super interesting. I chatted with him, and then we're going to have a snippet of his message.
Great. We also have, in a moment, we have a report from Danny Nesvadarani. And a couple other reports coming up, but we're going to start off with this report from Danny on an art exhibition that puts a spotlight on the lives of temporary workers.
Invisibles and Disposables, Temporary Foreign Workers, Life and Rituals is an art exhibition by Luz Rosas and Carlos Colleen that premiered at Place des Arts in Coquitlam, BC on January 17th, 2025. The exhibition aims to depict the life and experiences of temporary foreign workers, mainly from Mexico, during their time in British Columbia, using both photographs and cardboard produce boxes with text. Because the lives and experiences of temporary foreign workers are often underrepresented, according to the exhibiting artists, the goal of this exhibition was to make visible essential workers in our communities while finding new ways to collaborate and support them. This exhibition was created in collaboration with La Dignidad Migrante Society, a nonprofit organization based in Surrey, BC, that is run entirely by temporary foreign workers. The goal of the organization is to provide an organizing voice for temporary foreign workers, particularly those in the agricultural sector. This organizing voice aims to help prevent abuse, exploitation, racism, and discrimination in the workplace of temporary foreign workers in BC. CJSF attended the exhibition's opening reception to meet with Luz Rosas and Carlos Colleen, who agreed to sit down for an interview with CJSF to discuss the goals and overall purpose of their exhibition. Later on in the interview, we also ask if there has been any sort of response from some of the temporary foreign workers who are photographed in the exhibition. Please take a listen.
So at some point we try through Dignidad Migrante to open new possibilities that people can be engaged about all these situations. And arts as a tool helps a lot. So it's also try to move these sometimes in that point of view as a just 100% political perspective. And that's why sometimes I believe that also people reject that idea of like, oh, I can get involved in what happened with the workers. But at some point, when you start finding other visibilities that you can support with, I think it's also important that exhibitions like this happen. And it happens with other communities in Canada. South Asians or Chinese, Japanese, but in with Latin American workers is quite minimum. So I think it's a good also opportunity to open that window as well.
Another thing that really struck me with the exhibition too is that it wasn't just photographs. There was also those cardboard boxes that had text that were sort of in between. How did you decide, I guess, the way in which to go about that? That was something that I was curious about.
Well, it's a combination of two main things. One is I believe that Luz has one of the biggest archives about the migrant workers, not just in BC, but also in Canada. And every time that we talk, I tell her that, because I'm really proud that she was able to photograph them and being involved in that fashion, let's say. And it was useless for me as an artist too, just to do more photographs. There's no point. Like, you just like cop everything with images, and sometimes also you can lose track of what you really want to represent. So if we have this big visual position, I think for me, and talking about that part of the project with the boxes, is like bring information as well, right? So eventually you can make that contrast between this like leisure time that Luz tried to represent, comparing to, well, I mean, and also they suffer this. And I think it's a good counterposition. So the idea of the boxes is the title is Below the Fruit. So it's more like imagining that process that they work 14, 15 hours a day, just like packing everything, put it in boxes, you know, like they deliver it to farmers markets or supermarkets. And then when people pick them up, automatically it's all the labor there, right, that we don't see. So eventually it's more that I was thinking about that process, even for myself or even for us, when, you know, you have access to all these situations and you don't know exactly what happened behind it.
And I think it adds a lot too, because, you know, I guess this was my interpretation of it when I saw it, but, you know, in a lot of the photos that are presented, a lot of the, you know, people and the families that are being photographed, they're smiling, they look happy. And I think what the boxes sort of represented was they're still familial, they're still happy, they're still striving despite this all, and there needs to be more done so that they can,
yes, you got it right,
yeah, you know, it exists in a way that's equitable and fair for everyone.
Because just like to jump in fast, when you try to make also like too complicated artwork, like too conceptual, also you lose track of communication. And in this case, because I believe it's a strong political side, like when you try to be too conceptual and too poetic, also you lose that kind of sense. And I think that's why the show, personally speaking, works perfectly, because we were able to make that balance right, as you mentioned. You're right. Yep.
Just from, you know, this exhibition has been going on since January 17th now, since last Friday. What was the response like at the opening night, and what has it been so far?
Well, some of them there were impressed about what they told me, right? It's about the look in the eyes of the people in the portraits, the way that they look, because it's like they're looking at you. And so other ones, they were also to see the different ages that are there for the people in the portraits. Some people was very excited with one particular picture about the bingo game, where everybody saw like having so much fun together, right? Which sometimes they can have a very stressful. Well, it's just more like they live in isolation, even though they live together, because sometimes the conditions that they live into may be too crowded, right? To have some kind of they're living together. They're sharing probably one bedroom. They're sharing. If they're lucky, maybe they have more like 3 refrigerators for all of them, so they cook for themselves. Some of them have to cook. Some they don't know. Everything is far away, right? Like everything is far away to go to the store. They depend on transportation provide, or some of them, I guess, they want to be longer. They know how to get a taxi altogether and maybe go. Everything is fast, right? Send money home. So when they manage to get to these points of where they can gather together and do something for themselves and at the same time engage in a game activity, which, by the way, the game of the bingo, too, has information about the rights. So it's not just they learn to words, right? Like what is the contract, the permit. So it's a fun game, but at the same time, it's a learning game. And I guess that at the same time, too, when they have these gatherings, it really is like a way of psychologically be more peaceful and forget about whatever is around and speaking freely in your language and joking in your language. I think that's very important.
Mm-hmm. You said that the version of bingo they're playing has specific details about workers' rights?
Yes.
That's so interesting.
Or the radio, or words that they that they use, like the la farma, right, which is they call the farm.
Mm-hmm.
And it has you know, who's the el patrón, like the owner, or the foreman. So they in English and Spanish, so they can't they can relate and they can learn too.
Mm-hmm. Are you in contact with any of the people that are photographed as part of the exhibition? Have they said anything about the work that's been done?
Well, we have a WhatsApp with most of many of the women and the men too, and they're waiting for the link to the exhibition, which is going to be on the 24th February. It's going to be available through the places, our gallery, where this is in Port Coquitlam. And so it's going to be online, that they can have a virtual tour. So I guess all of them, it's hard for them to come to galleries, right? Because first of all, right now is the winter time, so most of them, they're not here. And the ones are here, some might be working in construction, but their times for working is just not, they don't check with the galleries, right? So I think they're very excited to see. They're waiting for that link to see it. Yeah, some of them, they know they're in the exhibition, and they're just very excited to see it.
Yeah, I think the link will be January, like next.
Yeah, the 24th.
Yeah,
next Friday.
January, yes.
Next Friday, yeah.
And also adding something important that Lou says is that's one of the problems with arts, or what we understand about the art world. Right, that usually is very pretentious, and sometimes we create, or some people in the cultural realm, like create this kind of like a snobby and bourgeoisie like approach about arts, and that's why also I believe it's not. I hope I say it properly again, but I always believe that these exhibitions are not specifically for the workers, because they know all the situations, right? They're always welcome to come and see it and engage also in that cultural, artistic perspective. But it's also, they know and they understand sometimes when we talk in Dignidad or with them in the events, it's like, at the end it's like, you need to drag the community, right? Or what we understand about this multicultural Canadian community to see, like, I mean, you know that these things happen, but you don't connect too much. Right, so that's why that example with the bingo game, people look at it and it's like it's strong, because I believe because they're laughing and they're having fun. Sometimes even for you, not for you, but like for the community, it's hard to understand, like if they suffer a lot, why they have also these things. And just to conclude, I strongly believe that the idea of the exhibitions is also destroy that part of porn misery that sometimes we expect to see in these kind of situations, right? Through political lens or the war lens, like you always expect that kind of like dramatization of everything. And these kind of things also make up a different impact on you, and you start to more like connected in a different way. or spread the voice, you know, like I don't expect that people eventually the next morning go to the farms and like, yeah, we want rice for our peers, and you know, because that's utopic in some ways. But for me also, the vision of these kind of situations is that, let's say you're gathering now that you came to the exhibition, and then when these kind of topics just like popped up in your conversation, then eventually you can add something. You know, like, oh, I went to this exhibition in Place de Arts where we saw these photographs about Dignidad Migrante, or do you know that also all these people unfortunately suffer discrimination, racism, by the same government that we believe is a liberal, democratic, progressive perspective? It's like, it's all the same. At the end, it's politics behind. But when you brought it to your table and start having those conversations, I think the job is done in some ways.
Once again, you were just listening to our conversation with Luz Rosas and Carlos Colleen, the exhibiting artists for Invisible and Disposables, Temporary Foreign Workers, Life and Rituals. You can find their exhibition at Place des Arts in Coquitlam, BC. You can also learn more about the exhibition on the Place des Arts website, which is at placedesarts.ca. You can also learn more about La Dignidad Migrante Society, as well as the various ways to support the organization through their website, dignidadmigrantesociety.org. Once again, this has been Danny Nesvedarani, your community journalist for CJSF 90.1 FM, Burnaby. This segment would not be possible without the continued support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada's Local Journalism Initiative. You can also listen to this piece on frequencynews.ca.
And, of course, immigrants, newcomers, and temporary foreign workers have been in the news a great deal over the last year and a half. Be a great idea to check out that exhibition and learn more about their lives and how they live here in Canada. Time to talk now about what's been going on in the news and with the whole trade war saga between the U.S. and Canada and Mexico, and to a lesser extent Denmark and China, and well, not lesser extent China, but you know, and well, and
there's
and
going
general...
to be many more countries to be involved in this ongoing saga.
I think so.
Trumpian brilliance on trade relations. But
so let's update on the latest news this morning, because of course on Saturday it was announced that tariffs would be imposed starting tomorrow, February 4th, on Canada and
correct.
Mexico and
yes.
China, 25% on the Canada and Mexico and 10% on China.
Yes.
But, of course, there were phone calls this morning between President Trump and the Mexican president and also with Prime Minister Trudeau.
Trudeau, not yet.
But they did have a call this morning, apparently.
Apparently.
And
well,
they're doing another call at 12 noon.
That is crazy. I think, you know, like, it's, I think Trump, he has made it clear that he does not view it as a simple trade dispute.
Yeah.
I think he posted that he wants Canada to be the fifth state.
Numerous times. So just, after the call with, Mexico's president, she tweeted, out that based on the call, they're going to make some investments in border security and a number of other areas, and the tariffs on Mexico are going to be paused for a month. Nothing like that came out of the initial call this morning with Prime Minister Trudeau, but they're again supposed to talk again at noon, and we'll see what happens then.
I you know, with Trump, you know, anything is possible. I think you kind of have to zoom out a little bit from kind of like, you know, what's the minute by minute going on with Trump, because he's so, I think, as the word goes, mercurial. But
generously.
Yeah. But I think, look, I think you kind of have to look at the fundamental picture here, which is that Canada has always had some version of this issue. With Trump, it's more acute. But that's just look at NAFTA, which was signed in 1994. And one of the premises of NAFTA was something like the auto sector, the forestry industry would benefit from unfettered trade with the United States. Mm-hmm. And there's a really interesting concept, I think, from the stock market that actually applies here. In the stock market, if you're a retail investor, how you win in the long run is that you ride the up waves, like the big up waves, and then you eat the small downwaves. The ups are in, you know, the 30-40 year time frame, much bigger than the downs. So you eat the downs, but you benefit from the ups, and you win relatively generously in the end. And you can, just using this analysis, you can see what the whole problem of Canada's trading relationship with the United States has been. That you haven't been able to benefit from any of the ups, right? Anytime there's a big American demand for forestry, and you know Canada's well, you know, well positioned place to provide it, 200% tariffs on Canadian softwood lumber.
Yeah.
Anytime Canada benefits from, say, advances in automotive manufacturing and gets a new assembly plant, you know, there's some weird American investigation. It doesn't matter if it's a Democratic or Republican president that pops up. Hey, you know, is it a subsidy or is it kind of a subsidy? My point is, if you can't get any of the big wins, the downs are not worth it. And you're not winning in the long run.
Yeah.
And go ahead.
That was it. No, just finish your thought.
I just thought there's got to be a different way, right? I saw a tweet this morning from a guy called Guy Verhofstadt, who was formerly a European commissioner, who was former prime minister of Belgium, who was formerly the leader of European Liberals, which is one of the biggest blocs in the European Parliament. And he was like, Canada should just join the European Union as a free and equal member.
Yeah.
And that got me thinking, I'm like, honestly, we should just do it. Because, you know, the age we live in, the age of AI, of the computer technology, is where physical supply chain integration becomes less and less important. And the trade in intangibles becomes much more important. And the ability to have unfettered access to markets, the ability to integrate your markets with one of the biggest trading blocks in the world in a way that doesn't penalize you when you actually do something really well and win, I think it's huge. And the other thing that is huge in my view is that suppose Trump does not release tariffs on Canada, that it just keeps going. He said he will tariff the European Union, but because the European Union is so big, he won't be not be able to afford to tariff it for very long.
No, I mean the overall economy, the size of the economy of the entire European Union, I think is actually larger than
the entire United European
States, and it's at least comparable, right?
It's comparable. It's comparable.
You know, it's not like bullying
a economy 1/11th of its size, like it is for Canada.
Yeah.
Canada has a smaller economy than the state of Texas, as Greg Abbott on Twitter over the weekend infamously declared as kind of a threat. My point is, look, Trump will, you know, do this kind of tariff tit for tat with EU, but it won't last for very long. It won't be very extensive.
Yep.
So there might come a point in several months down the road where Europe is no longer having a tariff war with the United States, but Canada is. Yep. So Canada will be paying, under that set of circumstances, higher tariffs than European countries in ocean away, which means that we will be penalized for not being a member of the European Union, but for having an economic union within the United States.
Yeah, you know, the debate around free trade in Canada has always been the benefits of free trade and better access to American markets and, you know, the overall benefits of free trade versus the potential loss of independence and the ability to be
a sovereign country.
Yeah, and also just, you know, to be pushed around by the United States.
That's just happening.
You know,
right,
I mean,
now
the first big free trade debate in Canada was in the very beginning of the
reciprocity, right?
Yeah, 1900s reciprocity under Wilfrid Laurier, and the debate was then, you know, the same as it was in the 80s and 90s, where it was, you know, should we have closer ties to the United States, economic ties to the United States, and what is the price of that? And of course what we're experiencing now is the price of that. You know, one of the, you know, I think various people have different opinions about it, but you know, I think the broader consensus is that from an economic point of view, free trade with the United States over the last 30 years has been generally beneficial to Canada. But here we are now, you know, one of the things that's happened is more integration, and we've become, you know, we're quite dependent on the United States as our biggest trade partner, in a really imbalanced way. which is to say we're much, you know, we trade a lot more as a percentage of our economy with them than they trade with us, which means
80% of our exports go to the United States.
Yeah.
A much smaller percentage of American exports go to Canada.
Yeah.
But I think there are two specific issues here. The first issue is that this particular constraint on our sovereignty, economic sovereignty, and national sovereignty, as it appears, is not. It does not just begin or end with Trump. And I think it's happened during the Biden era, even though it's much more under the surface. Mm-hmm. It's happened during the Clinton era. It's happened during the Obama era. It's happened during the Bush era.
Yeah.
It has happened under every single American president's recent presidency, Democratic or Republican.
Yeah.
It's transpartisan. Number two, and I think you mentioned a really interesting point, which is that, yeah, you know, this is we're not getting the downside of this. I do agree from an economics point of view that trade, integrated trade with the United States has been generally beneficial. I think we do have to look at the historical framework, which is that even pre-NAFTA, in the 1970s, Canada was already exporting a vast amount percentage of its exports to the United States, like 70%, something like that, even in pre-NAFTA. So NAFTA intensified the economic integration, but it did not materially or fundamentally alter the structure of it. I do think this is why the original debate is now kind of outmoded. The original debate is about Canadian economic nationalism, the East-West Corridor, the original national policy of John A. Macdonald versus continental North-South integration. I think some degree of integration with a larger economic entity at this juncture, given efficiencies, given global production chains, is inevitable. Mm-hmm. I think the smarter way to think about it is integration with whom. And the reason I say that is because, you know, in the sort of golden era of post-war kind of social economy, most of the trade, most of the valuable economic output was stuff like automotive manufacturing, was stuff like, you know, like
physical stuff,
high-end physical stuff. Well, you know, I don't think it takes a genius to see that the North American auto industry is not doing well. I don't think it takes a genius to see that Chinese EVs are coming sooner or later, one way or another. And then if and when they build domestic assembly plants in North America, as they will certainly, it will happen in the United States and not Canada. I think we can all see the politics of this. And my point is all these big things.
And, you know, maybe that part of Trump's goal is to create enough uncertainty with investment in Canada that investment goes to the United States.
Would, you know, if you're a Chinese manufacturer of leading, you know, in the edge EVs, would you try and play nice with Mr. Trump? Or would you kind of explore this smaller nation called Canada where you might gain no political advantages? I don't think, you know, the politics around Chinese EVs are doing great right now in the United States as they are.
Mm-hmm.
Can't imagine them making that economic decision to go north of the border rather than south of the border given their existing political situation.
Yeah.
Just can't imagine it. And so my point is, and this is not just, you know, EVs, it's stuff like robotics. This is mm-hmm. like a bunch of stuff. AI, right? You know, like Cohere is a Canadian AI firm. How long is it going to, you know, what are we going to do here? My point is, we're going to have to think bigger. And my view is that given where trade is going, given that it's no longer about these physical integrated supply chains, you know, like auto parts traveling from Michigan to Ontario and then to Mexico and then back.
Yep.
Why not be the beachfront of European integration in North America in the Western Hemisphere, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, European companies can come to Canada and use it as an exporting base to the United States because they have a fixed tariff arrangement with the United States that even Trump cannot disrupt. And the other thing is that Europe has a bunch of things, you know, existing, you know, cheaper labor. It's kind of like human capital and stuff like that, which we don't have, which would be hard for us to do on our own. And I'm just starting, you know, I think once you think through the logic of it, it's actually fairly challenging to think of a better way.
It certainly would address the issue of broadening our markets, right? Because we, you know, I mean, I think just as a function of geography, we're always going to be trading a lot with the United States.
Absolutely.
Even if we become part of the EU, it's not going to be like, oh, suddenly we're going to be trading mostly with the EU. We're still going to be trading mostly with the States. But we will get, you know, a stronger and better access to Europe, and you know, more of an incentive for you know, people with products to export to seek out opportunities in that market.
And I am not proposing at all whatsoever to replace exports to the United States with exports